ladies and gentlemen, we're back with our second episode already. I can't really believe that we're already that far into this whole quest. But joining me again, live from the Big Apple, New York City, New York, Sinan Schwarting.
Yes, great. You know, episode two of our wildly successful podcast, you know, it's great to be back.
Yeah, all we have left to do is find a host and get people to download this thing, and then it can really explode.
Right.
So yeah, once again, of course, Sinan joining me here, and this is Kaan Bayazit from Besiktas International.com. We're going to have a little look at Besiktas's current transfers, the status of some of the outgoing ones, and also address some of the more prominent rumors out there.
Yeah, we kind of did a season review in our first episode. If you haven't heard it, definitely go back and listen to that one. And within that, you got a pretty good sense of our worldview, you know, regarding Besiktas and where we think we are, where we think we need to be. And that'll give you a sense of how we're approaching this transfer season, probably. I'd like to insert a thank you. We've got the person who's been contributing music to this. Uses my namesake, Mimar Sinan, but it's not me. A New York producer who's donated his beats is another Besiktas fan, so shout out to him, thank you. And to any other creative Besiktas fans who might listen to this, who maybe follow Besiktas International also and want to contribute, we'd love to hear any musical contributions. We need little segue music, and furthermore, like any artists out there who want to make a name for themselves, you know, we're here for it.
Yeah, and in particular, I think video editors and graphic designers for logos and stuff like that. We're definitely still looking for a few capable people in that department.
I want to create a rating system, you know. Something out of 5 Black Eagles, you know, for transfer veracity or something like that. You know, so we might need a nice graphic for that. You know, if it's like 3.5 Eagles, what does that look like? You know, can't use the emoji for that. So
you just chop off the legs or something.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I could do a hack job in Photoshop for sure. but anyway, let's get to it. So
yeah, exactly. Let's move on to
the transfer season. Preview stage one of what's bound to be a long transfer season.
Without a doubt. So moving on to the official transfer news really of this coming summer, and of course the transfer window isn't officially opening for Turkish clubs until the 9th of June. However, we already have an official outgoing transfer, and that's Dusko Tosic, who has joined Guangzhou from China for 4.5 million euros. And Sinan, I think that's an amazing fee for a player who came in with really no expectations from Genç Terbiyeli on a free transfer, yeah. Mind you. I think a lot of people saw him as just a somewhat decent squad depth signing, but I don't think anyone expected him to make 100 appearances for the club in 3 years, 66 appearances in the league, multiple appearances, you know, in the Champions League, in the Europa League, and he did really well for us in the Champions League, and I think he surprised a lot of people because he is, you know, I mean, if you compare it to a Marcelo, if you compare it to a Pepe, especially Domagoj Vida, by no means is he in that same category of talent, but he really overperformed. I think he's one of the biggest overperformers that we've had in I don't remember how long. And
particularly
for us to get him on a free,
what he gave us financially, yeah, in return as an overperformer.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. And for us to get him on a free transfer when he's 30 years old, get really good mileage out of him for 3 years, and then sell him at 33 for 4.5 million euros to a Chinese club. Doesn't really matter where he goes, for 4.5 million euros. And there was English interest being shown in him in the winter as well. So it's not just that his only option was to go to China. There was French interest for him as well. But those clubs, of course, weren't willing to give close to 5 million euros.
Let me correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe what likely precipitated that sort of large offer from China was that he was actually gaining some interest from... Was he not gaining interest from English clubs?
Yeah. Supposedly, Tottenham were interested, like, supposedly. Don't know if that's true. Might have just been some agents at work there. But I do think also the fact that we sold Dembaba for 13 million euros to China 2 years ago, and he did really well in China up until the moment that he broke his leg. I think he scored like 27 goals or something. He did really well. Ersun Gluma is another guy we sold to China. He did well, but he couldn't settle. So I do think that also our track record in that sense isn't too bad at the players that they buy from us, that they do go and do well. Same thing with Cenk now, you know, going to England and he goes and does well. That's good for Beşiktaş's future as well, for becoming a club where teams are more confident that if we pay top dollar for someone, that they're going to get a good return on their investment. Dusko Tosic, I think, you know, amazing. He was an amazing soldier for Beşiktaş. We got a great fee for him. At the end of the day, I think that it's good that he goes and that he leaves for such a great fee. It's emotionally, of course, it's tough because we've really grown to love and appreciate Dusko Tosic for the great warrior that he is. But I mean, we do have to look at it this way as well. We have Domagoj Vida, who really was kind of being hampered by the presence still of Tosic, and Vida, you know, so much more potential, a lot younger. He'll be 29 this year. Croatian international. There's also the possibility of selling him still for a big fee to a top league at some point. But he's going to be a great get for us. Okay, so that's Dusko Tosic moving out, and we'll miss him, but we wish him all the best in China.
Yeah, best of luck, Mr. Tosic.
Hopefully we can reach out to him and maybe get him on the podcast at some point. That would be so amazing.
Tosic, congratulations! Great for the big money you're bound to receive.
2.5-year contract he signed, I believe, and he's going to be making around 10 million. I'm not sure if it's US dollars or if it's euros, but he's going to be making big money. So congratulations to him, and of course his wife.
I bet the food will be amazing.
Oh yeah. So the second one that's kind of confirmed, it's not really a transfer, but what we can confirm that Anderson Talisca will not be returning to Beşiktaş next season, and then we kind of alluded to it already in the previous segment. But we of course have had the great pleasure of having Anderson Talisca on loan for the past two seasons from Benfica. He's put in really good performances in both seasons. A little bit lacking in the first half of the season this year, in the league at least, but still a great performance on his part. And he'll be leaving the team. He has apparently agreed on personal terms with Manchester United. And now the big question is, just because Beşiktaş still holds the option to buy Anderson Talisca until the 31st of May. So let me just check. Yeah. Beşiktaş still holds the option to buy Anderson Talisca for a fee of 21 million euros until the 31st of May. So the big question now is, are Beşiktaş going to exercise that option? Are they going to buy Talisca from Benfica for 21 million and then immediately flip him and sell him for a bigger fee to Manchester United or possibly another team? That is the ideal scenario, of course. But we also have to
clarify. Yeah, we'd be gaining anything in excess of the 21 million.
Exactly.
That we'd have to inevitably be paying Benfica.
And Portuguese media right now are speculating a fee of around 40 million euros would be willing to pay. So if Beşiktaş could do that, they would make a 19 million profit.
Yeah.
The big obstacle here is his agent, probably. And of course, Benfica. Benfica don't want us to exercise that transfer, that option, that optional buyout clause.
Yeah, they
want which they, for the record, don't have any say over whatsoever. They signed that away 2 years ago. If we decide to buy him, we can do that, but only we do need Talisca to agree. That's the only hurdle. And then the big question is, how much influence does Benfica still have over Anderson Talisca? How much influence does his agent possibly have over Anderson Talisca? Because, you know, Benfica could be saying to his agent, look, you make sure he doesn't sign with Beşiktaş before he moves to Manchester United or whoever he goes to, and we'll give you 5 million euros. That's how this world works of agents. And Benfica are a notorious club that have you know, they're quite notorious on this part. They have really big sway, really big leverage with agents. They you know, of course, Jorge Mendes is very much involved in that club, and a lot of other big name agents. And you know, I mean, an agent will of course want to appease Benfica, while Benfica will also want to appease the agent. Manchester United has a pretty good relationship with Benfica, buys players from them from time to time. They bought Lindelof last season. I don't know if they bought any other players, but Benfica is not a club that, as a European great like Manchester United are, that you want to step on their toes.
Right, yeah.
So that's, to me, politically, it's a difficult move. And fans are going to be like, let's say we don't buy him, which is the scenario I'm sadly leaning towards.
Here's a funny side note, by the way, historical kind of significant side note. Benfica are also Black Eagles, right? And I believe that...
No, they're just Eagles, not Black Eagles.
Just Eagles, yeah. But I believe that we bought our eagle that flies around the stadium from Benfica. He was a transfer.
Do we have an eagle that flies around the stadium?
We had an eagle who flew around the stadium. I don't know. Maybe it was a one. Maybe it was a loan. Maybe we loaned him.
The first thing I've heard about that. But yeah, I mean, this is the thing. You know, if this doesn't happen, fans are going to be angry at the club. Fans are going to be angry at Fikret Orman. And people, if you're listening to this podcast, believe me, please. If Talisca is willing to do this for the club, because let's be honest, he doesn't have to do this.
He doesn't have to do anything. Yeah.
He doesn't have any. He does. There's no reason. This doesn't get him anything really. So if he's willing to you know, say, okay, you know what, you guys gave me two great years. You gave me a lot of opportunities to play in the Champions League and to further develop myself. If he sees that he owes the club a little bit in that regard, you know, of course he did give us his performances in exchange, so it's not like he really does owe the club anything. But if he feels like, you know what, I feel that Beşiktaş did enough for my career, that they deserve to earn money on me, and he decides to say yes, and we buy him, great.
And but let's quantify that for a minute.
If it doesn't happen, just...
No obligation. And I mean, yeah. Again, let's quantify what he's done. He's brought us a title, or he's been a big part of this title season. He brought us a championship. And in this season, quite frankly, like because of the sort of play of our forwards late in the year, I don't know if we would have even finished. Well, no, we would have clearly finished.
Yeah, we finished fourth anyway.
We would have finished fourth place. But we definitely don't make that late challenge and have that very exciting sort of situation at the end without his offensive power. So like he's provided quite a bit of entertainment to us, quite a bit of success.
I think
quite a bit of theoretically, like, but even without that, you know, you can't.
I think a lot of fans were hoping for us to buy him permanently and for him to just stay another season or maybe two.
I'm in that camp.
Of course. I think I'm in that camp. Two, I'm not 100% certain on, because I'm kind of torn. I think Talisca is a fantastic talent. I think he has the potential to become a really big player at the world stage. But I kind of, you know, and this is more due to shortcomings in our creative department, but I kind of want a number 10 to provide a little bit more on the creative end. But he, of course, you know, makes up for that with scoring goals. But that's another whole other discussion. But of course, I think fans, you know, it kind of be ending on a sour note if we don't get anything out of this. I think. But people just need to understand that if that happens, that's not because of an unwillingness on the club's part. Maybe I don't know how they will swing it, how they'll explain it publicly. But believe me, if the club if he is willing to sign, they will sign him and they will sell him. There's absolutely no chance that he's going to play for Beşiktaş next season,
yeah.
But there is a chance that he will be making money for the club via the transfer. But
yeah.
Like I said,
I want to go on record going back to before we sort of fully turn the page, but that the main reason I had hoped we might keep him to, you know, keep him, you know, to play him, was just the idea of what that represents as a shift in what Beşiktaş is, you know, that to be able to acquire a young guy who's like on the verge of making the Brazilian national team and then maybe, you know, making those appearances while on Beşiktaş at that age and like making this, like what I enjoyed much about his stay was how committed he was and how much he seemed to enjoy being with the team. And even like theoretically for a while, it seemed like he wanted to kind of stick around and be a part of it. You know, he kind of spoke about it at some point previously.
I think that if he would have gotten into the World Cup squad, that his take on this might be a little bit different, but I think that he realizes that at this point where Beşiktaş are right now, yes, we made a lot of progress over the last 2 years internationally on the international stage, perception wise, but still to get into the Brazil national team, I think that he realizes he needs to take that next step in his career. He needs to move to a bigger club, and Manchester United certainly are that. But of course, you know, if he does go to Manchester United and he ends up just sitting on the bench all the time, that could be a problem. But of course, he's young enough to, you know, if his first season or second season at Manchester aren't a huge success, he can always decide to move back out and he could always come back. That's still very possible. I definitely don't rule out an Anderson Talisca return somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
That would, of course, involve him to flop. I am afraid.
I'm afraid. Or it would involve him coming back like in 10 years.
yeah, of course. Yeah, maybe in his early 30s, maybe. And that could happen. But if he succeeds at a big club like Man United, of course, him coming back, the chances of that are slim. But the big question, like I said, is right now, are Beşiktaş going to make money on this transfer or aren't they? That's something that remains to be seen. And we will find out relatively shortly because, like I said, the deadline for that buyout clause is the 31st of May. I can tell you that the club's intention is to do exactly that. But like I said, Benfica can put so much pressure on his agents, on him, maybe even on Manchester United, that they can really put a stick in the wheel. And it just comes down to whether Talisca is, you know, if he, of course, extended with Benfica until 2020. So there is leverage there as well. We'll just have to wait and see how it works. And I hope, of course, that we can get some money out of this. And if we can get... if we can buy him and we can sell him for 35 or 40 million euros and make a really nice profit on him, that would, of course, also open up a lot of opportunities for us to find a suitable replacement. Because, yes, we still have our money from the Genk transfer, but not qualifying for the Champions League, that's a huge loss in terms of revenue for next season. So we aren't going to be able to splash big unless we sell some players for a good amount. We aren't under FFP, financial fair play, anymore this summer, so we don't have to sell before we can buy anymore. But of course, if the club wants to remain financially responsible, doesn't want to dig themselves into a financial hole again, then they have to be a little bit careful of how they spend their money. And of course, if you would manage to get 14 million or more or so of a profit on Talisca, that would open up so much more opportunities for us.
Yeah.
So that basically covers the official part of the transfer so far this season. So let's move on to a couple of rumors. There's a couple of rumors out there that have taken up some
space. Before we do that, I wanted to do one fun thought experiment.
Sure.
What it would have taken to have kept Talisca. And I think I've kind of deduced that there are you hit on two of them. One would be making the Brazilian World Cup squad, but that would have happened if
we won. Well, the league.
One is like we go on that sort of magical run, and if for example, if Talisca scores like two goals in that game against Galatasaray and we win,
yeah,
right,
that's true.
Bam,
that's
like, true. Probably getting that call up. The other one is the red card against Bayern Munich in the first leg of the Champions.
Profida. Yeah, maybe. I mean, if he could have shown himself against Bayern and he could have maybe scored a goal or something, that of course also would have caught some attention.
If we make that whole tie competitive, like to some extent, like we showed we could in the second leg, even though we could have been more competitive too, you know, we were just as out of it as they were, you know, kind of.
But also, I mean, qualifying for the Champions League next season, I think that would have been that's a deal breaker for him.
That's the main thing for me.
You know, I don't think he wants to play Europa League next season. Like I said it before, I like the Europa League. I think the Europa League are great for a Turkish club. You know, because realistically, a Turkish club does not have a chance to win the Champions League.
No.
The chances to win the Champions League are like 0.0001 or something. But to win in the Europa League, that is within almost possibility.
This year, though, like they crept up for like 2 weeks in our season. I think those odds were looking like a little, you know. You know, there was a moment where I had,
yeah,
you know,
we did the first
0.320.
Yeah, but realistically, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, and you know, for a player like Talisca who does have the ambition to play for Brazil, of course, you know, playing Europa League is, you know, playing Champions League group stages and then maybe going out and going into the Europa League, that's one thing, like we did 2 years ago. But to start in the Europa League straight away, I think that's you know, it just doesn't get as much attention, and I think where he wants to be, because he is an ambitious player. But yeah, let's wrap up on Talisca. We'll find out how it goes and maybe talk about it next podcast, and that we got a lot of money for him. But now let's segue into the more unclear waters and the rumor mill. And of course, you know, we aren't going to dig into bullshit rumors. And sorry for dropping a swear word there, I guess.
There might be a beep there at the end.
Yeah. But we're not going to dig into rumors that are obviously not realistic. We aren't going to address rumors that are in Fanatic, Fotomatch, stuff like that. That's something we don't do. People who follow Beşiktaş International already, they'll know that we do stick to a certain standard. And of course, you know, when it comes to foreign stuff, we report that, and we can't really check the credibility of that as well as we can Turkish sources. But let's dig into some of the sources from Turkey, and Şafak Malatya from Güneş Gazetesi.
Well, before we get on into it, I want to transfer rumor portion into two parts, because we're getting a bunch of chatter on strikers, and we're getting a bunch of chatter on right backs at the moment, right fullback.
Yeah, and other positions. But
let's start first.
Let's talk about Emre Agbaba and Musa. Okay, so
blew my whole theory. Okay, go for it.
Let's talk about some of the more concrete rumors, and the first that most people probably have heard about is Emre Agbaba from Alanyaspor, 25-year-old central attacking midfielder. He has had two really great seasons for Alanyaspor, especially this season. He scored 14 goals, I believe, which is the same amount as Alassane Talisca, mind you.
Interesting.
He is a little bit of a different type of a player than Alassane Talisca, of course. He'll score more goals from outside of the box.
So would we classify him as an attacking midfielder?
Yeah, I would probably compare him, if you want to compare him to a player from our past, maybe Tümer Metin. I'm not saying that he's on the same level, but Tümer Metin, I would say he has some resemblances with, you know, Mehmet Topuz when he was playing for Kayserispor, Bilal Kısa when he was playing for Akhisar. I think similar to that. He's not really a classical number 10. He's more a little bit he's the kind of a hybrid between a 10 and more of a regular attacking midfielder. So
maybe in the Ozan mold, even to some extent. Huh?
No. Ozan is more a deep lane playmaker. So yeah, Emre, he's gonna get you goals rather than. And he's going to get you assists too. I think he's kind of a blend there between creativity and goal threat.
Does he have history with the Turkish national team?
Yeah, he does play for the youth team. He has been called up for the Turkish national team right now. He has been called up. He's born and raised in France, so he's not an actual Turk. Born and raised, he was born in France, and he has been coming up through the youth ranks of Antalyaspor, I believe, and then he ended up, because of their connection with Alanyaspor, he ended up on loan at Alanyaspor, if I'm not mistaken, and they ended up buying him permanently. And he's been really kind of the talk of the town the last two seasons, and a lot of people, Fenerbahce, Galatasaray, Başakşehir, Beşiktaş, a lot of clubs have shown interest in him. A lot of fans have been, tooting his horn and being all like, oh, we want this guy on our team. And I'm usually a little wary about those young Turkish players that do well. It doesn't always translate to a really good performance at a bigger club. But he seemingly, according to Şafak Malatya from the Güneş Gazetesi, he is a done deal. We'll see if it ends up being true. Stuff can always happen until the contract has been signed. Stuff can still happen, of course. Good transfer squad depth wise. But personally, I really hope we get more of a marquee signing for that attacking midfielder role. I hope that Emre Akbaba proves me wrong and that he turns out to be the next to Mermetin, because he was a player that we got in kind of under the radar a little bit from Samsunspor back in the day, and he grew out to be a really, really good player for us.
And so for younger listeners, to Mermetin was not always just kind of an annoying TV announcer.
I actually liked Collins.
Yeah, no, he's not. Of all of them, he's actually one of my favorites. But he was actually a phenomenal player who scored some amazing important goals. But I'm sure you're like your fathers and uncles have told you about that probably.
And he played for the club, of course, when Sergen made his return, and he was kind of in his shadows for a while there.
Yeah.
But then when Sergen left for the last time, kind of was forced down by John Tigana back in the day. Tumor really took over, and he really became the creative spark of the team. Star player, really, in my opinion, together with Ahmet Hasan, maybe. He ended up making that really controversial move to Fenerbahce, which has soured a lot of our fans on him.
Sure.
But that doesn't take away of his performance, his ability. He was a great player, end of the day. And I hope, someone like Emre Akbaba could be that too. I am not sure if he can.
And I want to give a little bit more info on Emre Akbaba and the national team. Just because I pulled it up here. But he actually made his first and only appearance with the national team towards the end of last year. So he actually hasn't had a lot of opportunities.
No, so yeah, and that's the thing as well. Like,
correct me if I'm wrong, I think he scored in that match against Albania.
Yeah, you might be right. I'm when it comes to Turkish national team, I'm kind of... I have to be honest, I'm not very high on the Turkish national team the last couple of years. And that's irrelevant to its performance, but I'm just not a fan of the politics involved and the way it works and how players get playing time. And it's more based on the club they play for rather than their performance.
I'm with you.
Like, for example, like someone like Nuri Sahin having only, 50 or so caps, when a guy like Selçuk Şahin has 70 or something, just stuff like that, that just doesn't sit well with me. But that's a whole other discussion. Emre Akbaba, like I said, he's the first supposed incoming transfer, according to Şafak Malatya from the Güneş Gazete. And a lot of other people are reporting on it as well. But it's kind of the news on that has kind of quieted down a little bit. So that was really something that came out last week already before the final match of the season. So we'll have to wait and see still how that goes. Another name that has been rumored, a Turkish domestic transfer, is Musa Çağran from Osmanlıspor. And of course, Osmanlıspor went down to the second division. They relegated the season, and Musa has been one of their best performers over the last 3 years. And this season,
his name has been circulating around some of the bigger teams for years now.
Yeah, he went to Galatasaray at a very young age, that didn't really work out really well for him. But he's really been building his career up the last couple of years. He was great at Karabükspor, I thought. His first two seasons at Osmanlıspor, he was phenomenal. He was great in the Europa League for them last season. And this season, he kind of disappeared a little bit, together with the entire team, really. But I think that would be a decent squad depth move. He's 25 years old, but apparently his dad admitted that his actual age is 2 years older than he is. Back in 2009, so supposedly he's 27 now, rather than 25.
Like, still not excessively old, but
that's still a good age for a squad depth player. And I think, you know, Musa Çağran, we say squad depth player, and I said the same thing about Emre Agbaba, but it doesn't mean that because you're brought in as a squad depth player that you can't grow into being a key player. You know, it's always possible. It always just simply depends on the opportunities you get from the coach and whether you take those opportunities. So, yeah, Musa Çağran, he's a more defensive-minded midfielder. And, of course, you know, he'd be playing in that Atiba Hutchinson-Gary Medel role. So for him to really do get a chance at a serious place in the team might be a little bit tougher. Emre Agbaba, of course, you know, I think that we have to.
And also, it's a good move. We're not going to be in the domestic cup.
Oh, yeah, right. That's true. But this season, we kind of had a problem in that position, in that attacking midfielder role, because when Anderson Talisca wasn't performing well in the league, Şenol Güneş tried a lot of different things. He tried putting Ozan there. He tried putting Tolgay there. But neither of those are really attacking midfielders.
Yeah,
both of them are more central. So Agbaba, regardless of whether he is going to end up being our starter, and I, you know, with all due respect to Emre, I hope that he isn't brought in that role, that he is seen as the next starting number 10. Now, I'm not saying that I don't wish him to grow out into being that, but I hope that he is going to be one of two players brought in for that position, that they will then compete for that role. But yeah, that's Musa Çağran. Then the next rumor that's also kind of taking some steam, that's Demba Ba making a return.
Yeah.
He, of course, played
till now. Let's do the striker. Yeah. There are three strikers that we're being tied to, you know, with credible sourcing. One is Demba Ba. And now there's new information that there's a potential Chinese team coming in. Have you heard about this?
I've heard about it, but supposedly the numbers that are being put out there are exaggerated, greatly exaggerated. And that might just be some agent's play.
You know, something silly.
You know, if you're kind of involved in this world as I am, I get approached by agents to put news out there. That's stuff that happens. Agents will contact journalists and they'll ask them, look, I've got this scoop for you. Will you publish it? Whatever. I've had that in the past happen, that agents actually approach me and say, look, I've got this player, you know, or coach linked to a Turkish club. Can you get it in a newspaper or something? Can you get it to someone who, whatever, you know, can get it published, whatever. So agents play those games all the time. So whenever these kind of rumors come out, you have to take it with a huge pinch of salt. But Demba Ba, you know, of course, last season, he joined us for the second half of the season, only made two appearances, scored a goal against Besiktas. It was still kind of feeling the wasn't fully recuperated from breaking his leg, and that's also why in the summer we didn't bring him back, because he wasn't fully healed and he didn't play for another 6 months. But then in the winter, the opportunity arose there to for us to bring him back, but we opted to go for Wagner Love, unfortunately, in hindsight. And also, even back then, I preferred to get Demba because he would have been free, whereas we paid way too much for Wagner Love, I think, for a player of his age. But we didn't, and Giuseppe took a chance, and he actually did really well for them. He made 10 starting appearances, made 13 appearances in total, scored 7 goals, and gave 1 assist. So Dembaba definitely did a good job at Giuseppe, and now his way back to Besiktas seems a possibility. Now, the big question here I have for you, Sinan: would you prefer us to sign more of a marquee signing? Because you didn't mention the third name. I think you were going to mention Mario Mandzukic from Juventus.
So there's Mandzukic. There's the other one is Morelos.
Yeah, that's a rumor that was published 2 days ago in the Scottish newspapers, but that definitely wouldn't be a marquee signing, in my opinion.
Are we giving credence to the Fernando Torres rumors?
I haven't actually seen those. Where did you read them?
they're big. They're all over the Turkish press today, and I believe it was coming from a foreign, I think it was from a Spanish source, but I heard that Spanish sources are not particularly reliable either.
Well, of course, he did a bit farewell to Atletico Madrid now, but God, I hope we don't get him. That's all I can say. I really hope that those rumors don't hold any merit. But
rumors are that he also wants like $4.5 million or something. So like.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he does. But the thing is with Besiktas is that we're pretty consistent in going after players year after year. This board has the tendency to you know, if it doesn't work out one transfer period, we'll just try again the next one. So we have in the past tried to get Fernando Torres, so it is definitely possible. Personally, I hope it doesn't happen. I would much rather just have us get Dembaba, who we know knows the league. We know what we get with him. We know he's still in a physical shape where he will perform. And with Torres, I just fear that we would get another Alvaro Negredo.
I feel like with Torres, there's the capacity for a kind of Gomez. Like rebirth?
Oh no, I really don't think so.
A capacity, like I'm not saying it's a likelihood, but I would definitely say that there's a much higher chance, or a much higher likelihood that he would slap, you know, and that it wouldn't.
Well, the thing is, where I say that just a second Negredo is that we'll be getting in a striker that plays football really well, that knows how to give a good pass, and you know that'll. I just think that he'll play more as a 10 than he will as an actual deep striker, and that's the problem I see with Torres.
Yeah,
we don't need that. We saw that this season that's not something we need. So I would much rather, we've seen with Kyle Larin that how much of a difference it can make to have a striker that's just always in the box, and I know that Larin got a lot of criticism in the U.S. for being that striker, being that guy that's always in the box and is just quote unquote waiting for the ball. But when you have a certain amount of quality in your team and you have a winger like Ricardo Quaresma, and you have a certain level of a team around the striker, sometimes that's what a team needs, a striker that's just in the box, you know? That just does that and does that well, and not every team needs a striker that's able to able to do what Negredo is able to do in front of the box.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just, you know, for me, I would really be disappointed if we would end up getting someone like Fernando Torres. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, if we do end up getting him, that he wouldn't perform well. It's possible. You know, I'm by no means.
It's not likely, sincere. But it's possible. But within that, back to your question now, Demba Ba's, for me, like the main, like obviously there's the huge sentimental value of who he is and what he's already done for the club and bringing him back. But the main positive attribute is I think he actually kind of makes room for Kyle Larin, you know, because you don't want to overplay a guy like Ba, given the injury history and given, you know, particularly the gruesome injury he had in China. so, you know, I think that's like in a way, Demba Ba becomes like an insurance policy to Kyle Larin, right?
Yeah. That's exactly how I see it. Like, Demba Ba is a proven striker. He's a big enough name, but he's also at a point where I don't think he. You know, 2 years ago or three, but when we bought him, which is 4 years ago, I guess, when he was brought in, he was a big marquee signing. If he'd come in now, he wouldn't be a big marquee signing. He'd still be a great signing for us, I think, in terms of quality, but he isn't going to be the player that has to play every game. He is the star. He has to play, which Mario Gomez was
right.
3 years ago.
I think that would likely be for that.
Yeah, maybe. But he would. So he would leave the possibility to a Kyle Larin to get his chances. And to me, kind of, if we would end up signing someone like Mario Mandzukic, who would be that type of a marquee signing that would probably play every game. You know, I'm not saying that we even have a chance to get him because we don't have Champions League football, so might not even be a possibility in his mind. But if we would end up getting someone like him, then you almost have to loan out Kyle Larin because I don't think that Kyle Larin sitting on the bench for 90% of the season is going to do him any good. And I think we saw in the brief time that he played, that he has so much potential, and that it would really be would us be squandering that potential if we don't give him plenty of playing time this coming season.
I see the Cenk of almost like two or three seasons ago, you know, when he was at that stage where he kind of needed to be breaking in, and he was doing enough, you know, to do so. But like, you know, we had kind of quality guys that needed to be playing, but like you don't want to stifle a guy because he's young. I mean, in a sense, if you have a guy who's young and he's performing, like that's what you want. And to your point previously about Larin being known as a guy who kind of sits around and waits for the ball, it's a very small sample size. But in that last match of the season, he was making fantastic runs. You know, his most impressive goal was that run on the wing and that kind of very precise kind of, you know, he turned the keeper.
Great
little
finish.
You know, that was pretty, and he was actually quite active. So I mean, he's young enough to be coached too. You know, that's another thing.
And that's the thing with Şenol Güneş. He has an amazing track record with strikers, so he could really shape Kyle Larin to the next insert former Turkish top scorer. You know, Burak Yılmaz, Fatih Tekke, Şota Arveladze. Okay. Mario Gomez, whatever, you know, he's made so many strikers top scorers in Turkey.
That's a positive for Demba Ba, is that he opens things up for Larin. Now the negative is that we're losing Talisca, and so, you know, we're losing 20 goals, right, in competitive play. And so you know, in losing that, you want a striker who you can kind of guarantee. You know, I don't know if we're at a point with Larin where we're guaranteeing like 15 goals from him, you know? And can we get that from Demba Ba, you know?
I think we can. I think, if I'm honest, from what I've seen of Larin, and you know, the thing with Larin is, of course, that he can have, you don't notice with a young player, like, we see what he's done in a couple of minutes. And so there's definitely potential there for a 20 plus goals scoring striker, I think. But you never know with a young player. Maybe he has a period where he just fades away completely. That can always happen. With Demba Ba, I think you know what you're getting. I think if you play Demba Ba in every match and he doesn't get a serious injury, I think that Demba Ba is a 15 to 20 goals a season striker for sure, even at 33. With Laren, I think the potential is even higher. But then he has to play, of course, every match. I think if Laren's going to do what Cenk did 2 years ago or 3 years ago when we had Mario Gomez, I think that the eight to ten goal season in the league would be phenomenal. But yeah, let's move on to a couple more of the rumors before we wrap this up.
Burak Yılmaz, right fullbacks.
No, we still have to talk about Burak Yılmaz. This is also a big rumor right now. Let's be honest. I mean, how do you feel about a potential return of Burak Yılmaz?
I feel like I would feel good about him coming in with Ba. Does that make sense? In that you have that insurance.
But then you're limiting, I think you're severely limiting Kyle Laren's playing time if you bring them both in. So then you get back into a position where you're going to have to loan out Laren.
But I would almost use Burak as the third.
You don't have to look at how you would do it. You have to look at how Şenol Güneş is going to do it. And I can guarantee you, if Burak Yılmaz comes in, he's going to be number
one. And that's problematic for me.
Because we're not making a fantasy team right here. We're talking about realistic rumors, and that what we think, our opinions, yes, but with an educated guess with how is the coach going to utilize these players, and how is it going to impact, for example, Kyle Laren, who for us was a little bit of a sparkle of hope at the end of the season going into this new campaign. So Burak Yılmaz and Demba Ba, I think that's going to be problematic for Kyle Laren's playing time. One or the other,
right.
I think
For me, no. Ideally, Burak Yılmaz would be like a third insurance policy, I guess. A second, right? If Demba Ba is the first to Laren. But
do you have any philosophical objections to bringing Burak Yılmaz back, like a lot of Beşiktaş fans do?
Not in terms of the history of him moving around and playing for various clubs.
Well, I think the main issue with him is that what a lot of our fans still really resent him for is that dive.
Then yes, I'm actually with the fans. And not necessarily just that dive, but like that and the plethora of other dives and just sort of questionable, problematic behavior.
But then the question is, in a league as dirty as the Turkish, Turkish football is, if you look at the, you know, there was an interesting statistic floating around the other day where the amount of offside goals that the team scored and was counted. Of course, ideally, you don't want any offside goals to count, but we got two. Yeah. Which I think is an acceptable amount, which is an acceptable amount of error.
Yeah.
Room for error on the referee's part. But Galatasaray got 11, Fenerbahce got 10, and Başakşehir got 8.
Add that up with goals that we actually had discounted that were onside.
Oh, yeah, we had a couple of those. Like the one Negredo scored in Fenerbahce, that would have been the equalizer when it was still 10 versus 10. And there's a couple of those, yeah. But But I mean, in a league as let's call it cat, as dirty as the Turkish league is, you're kind of almost forced to fight fire with fire to a certain extent. So can you really object to having a player that will dive for a penalty? That's an advantage our rivals have, and I think in the past that we have always been a little bit too goody two shoes. With our players just, you know, being a little bit too fair at times. And I think it has changed a little bit. I think we have become more of because at the end of the day, going down for a penalty, it's like it or not, that's kind of wanting to win and having a winner mentality that you do kind of have to have. You have to have that.
I'm going
to
go on a bit of a tangent here, really briefly, because I know we're out of time, but.
Yeah.
I remember when like Pepe and Quaresma and stuff were talking to Ronaldo, you know, and the Beşiktaş fan base went crazy and were like, come to Beşiktaş, you know, and all that stuff. And this is hot take number two. I'm sorry, I got to do it, I guess. But I'm a Messi guy. I'm a Messi stan. Now let me moderate this insofar as I feel like we are so lucky to be in a generation where we have these two players who are probably one and two in history, or you know, in that.
You mean Ronaldo and Messi?
And I'm not a Ronaldo hater in regards to his talent. I think he's an amazing. Yeah. You know, in some ways, maybe actually, as far as like personal attributes, better than Messi. But you know, I'm a Messi guy. I really am, I hate Ronaldo. like as much as I know he's amazing, I hate him. I hate the flapping. I hate the. Like, you know, they're like, I don't want to play because, like, the media is being mean to me. You know, like, I hate all of that shit. I hate it. Hate it. And so for me, like, you know, I envisioned, like, what would happen if a guy like Ronaldo were to join my team. You know, like, one of these guys I perennially hate. And, of course, you would never be sad if a guy like Ronaldo joined
You'd throw out all your...
Because like I hated Pepe. I hated Pepe. I remember there was a game against the Netherlands they played, the national teams, and Pepe was one of the dirtiest. Like I'd never seen anyone so dirty in my life. I thought, and I hated him. And I'm not gonna lie, like when we signed him, I was like pissed. I think I even wrote on Twitter. I was like, damn it, we signed Pepe. But then like literally a week later, you know, you see some of the videos where he's like smiling and like you know where he's not. Wearing a Real Madrid shirt.
Plus, I think with Pepe, you also have to keep in mind that he hadn't actually gotten a red card since 2011. So that reputation of him being a ticking time bomb who gets red cards left and right, that's just not accurate anymore. He's really... I mean, he still has his mean streak, for sure. But I don't think he is the same player he was.
What I've learned is that there's a cultural... You know, the way that Real Madrid's... Like, their culture is, as a unit, I think, as a fan base... It's very trolly, you know. It's very.
They're extremely high demanding fans, yeah. You know. To
and I think, you know, Pepe was kind of playing a role, and like, and within that unit too, there's a you know, I think they were also very disturbed by, the very sound system that Barcelona had in place for that really long stretch there, and like the quality of the players and. What they're doing, you know, yeah, they're reacting to that kind of negatively and playing the role of the
bad
guy.
That's kind of what we're seeing with Fenerbahce this season, with their reaction to us. I think
I would, yeah, I'm down for
that. I mean, you know, I say it with a smile, but really, and if any Fenerbahce fans are listening to this podcast, they'll probably think, oh, fuck that guy, bleep that guy, whatever, you know. But it really is, I think, a case of, you know. How do you stop something? You kind of have to start sabotaging it off the field, you know, and that's kind of what they did this season to us. But yeah, I mean, please, you know, make your points.
Yeah.
About
regarding Ronaldo, like who is a guy who I genuinely don't like. Burak Yılmaz, I dislike probably 10 times more than Ronaldo because of just like, in particular, I remember him like diving into the box from outside of it in a huge game,
and he got a penalty
getting the
for
penalty,
it as well.
Like decisive. I'll never forget that. And again, you really gotta hate. You gotta hate the refs more than the player.
Exactly.
Playing the game.
Right?
Don't hate the. Hate the players
and plus, I mean, Burak already had the reputation back then.
Exactly.
And then, you know, I think you just have to. I think that referee was more than willing to accommodate. But yeah, so basically, what you're saying is, I think, because I know you're very tired right now. What you're saying is that probably, you know, even though you don't like him, if it's good for the team, you'd have him, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's not going to have the impact of a Ronaldo inherently, right?
Yeah. And I do have to say that I have noticed from our fans that, you know, before this season, really, when we were also in the market for Burak Yılmaz and Şenol Güneş really wanted him, we ended up not signing him because the fan backlash was so
That's
great.
Funny.
But I have the impression that it's diminished. It's not. I'm not gonna say that there's not any wouldn't be any backlash anymore, because there still definitely would. But I think it has greatly diminished compared to the beginning of the season. I think that his performance at Trabzonspor has opened eyes. I think the lack of performance of Negredo has also opened eyes, in the sense that for a lot of fans, and some fans will always be like, okay, you know what, he just doesn't have the values of the club. He doesn't deserve to wear the shirt. And I get that. But I also think that I'm kind of in that camp. But I think people also kind of have to realize that football is a business first and foremost, and money is really important. Qualifying for the Champions League is really important. Winning the league is very important. And if we want to have continued success, then at the end of the day, I'd rather take a 20-goal-a-season Burak Yılmaz over a 7-goal-a-season Negredo. Yeah, that's the end of it.
In the first pecking order, though, I would say Ba over Burak Yılmaz.
And then would you take someone like a marquee signer like Mario Mandzukic?
I would honestly take Mandzukic first. Just because he's good. I'll bleep that out. He's really good. Second,
I mean, if he's loaned out. I think if we would get Mandzukic, I would probably prefer us to loan out Laren. Yeah. Although, I mean, if we just get Mandzukic and you don't get Ba, but it looks like we're getting Ba, then you know, if you just get Mandzukic, then, I mean, still, Laren would still probably get plenty of playing time. For you, it's Mandzukic, Ba, Mandzukic or another marquee signing, Ba, Burak Yılmaz. That's kind of what you're looking for.
I think that's probably my ranking.
Okay, now we have 4 or 5 more minutes, so we really have to be a little bit short-winded, but on the right back position, there's some rumors going around. The last one I saw has been Stefan Lichtsteiner from Juventus.
The other one as well, right?
The Perez from AS Roma, you mean?
Bruno.
Yeah.
Perez, right?
And then Bruno Perez from AS Roma. So those are two, I mean, especially Lichtsteiner, someone that I've personally wanted for a couple of years now, because I know he's been getting up there in age a little bit.
He's 34 now, right?
But I think he's 33, maybe 34, but I he's definitely still a player that I know he can still go. And there's been a very interesting little interview that he put out there over the last couple of days. Turned down Dortmund, doesn't want to go to China. He just wants to go to a club that will accommodate, that'll give him that'll accommodate him well, I guess. So for me, that's definitely a player that I'd definitely be interested in.
I spoke with my friend who's a Roma fan about Fez, and he was not particularly excited. He did not get much playing time this year with Roma. He's notoriously more of an attacking fullback, not so sound defensively. And I think you could classify Lichtsteiner as a sort of attacking fullback as well, although more sound defensively, perhaps. So that's an interesting thing to note, that Senol Güneş or front office, whatever, that they're going to double down on the sort of attacking fullback. Alongside Adriano.
I think if you have Adriano on the left, you can afford to go with a little bit more of of course, Adriano is an attacking player as well, but he's, defensively sound. For me personally, Lichtsteiner, definitely someone I would be interested in. Another rumor that's going around is Mehmet Şekicelik from Istanbulspor, second division, but he's also been called up to the national team. 21-year-old, and he's been touted to be the next Gökhan Gönül. So that's someone that I usually don't really buy into all that hype. But Evran, one of our guys that works for Business International, he's watched a couple of games from Istanbulspor, and he was kind of he really liked what he saw from Mehmet Çelik, or Şekicelik, whatever his name he goes with, which surname he goes by. So I think definitely that would be an interesting signing. I know that there's Fenerbahce has interest in him as well. I'm sure Galatasaray has interest in him. And then that's a rumor. And then there's, of course, the rumor that we had in January, Khan Ihan. He was rumored as well. I don't think he's the best right back. He's more a central defender, but he did play a couple of games for Turkey at right back and did quite well. But he recently extended with his club. So, yeah, I mean, what would you like to see? Would you prefer someone like Lichtsteiner, Bruno Perez, or would you like to go more down the youth path and go for a Mehmet Seki Çelik, or both?
I mean, we do have Gökhan Gönül
at the moment. Who's aging.
Who's aging.
And but, has injury
so what,
issues.
I guess maybe going youth to back up his aging presence might not be bad. But conversely, I mean, I mentioned the attacking fullback situation because I think if there's two guys in that role that they're looking at, it might suggest something tactical that they're trying to do, in which case I can't question that. You know, I'm not going to say we need to get something.
Selgiriş has expressed to the board that he wants a ride back. So I'm sure that the thing that how it works, Selgiriş, except for with Burak, he doesn't actually tell the board, I want this player. He gives the board a profile, and then the board, the transfer committee, goes out and looks for players that fit that profile. So what you said about you know, them looking at offensive right backs, I definitely think there's merit to that. But also, I mean, I think in general, Beşiktaş are going, you know, Jenner is a very offensive back. Adriano is a predominantly offensive back as well. He's a different style than Jenner, but he's also a very offensive back. He played a lot as a midfielder in his career as well, even as a winger. If you remember last season against Napoli, in Napoli, he started as a left winger, if I'm not mistaken. And then, you know, Gökhan Gönül, of course, is also an offensive left back, right back. So I definitely think that we are going for our more offensive players. And I think that's logical given the position we're in the league. We're going to dominate most games. So having offensive players is more logical. And also in the Europa League, I mean, certainly in the beginning stages, you'd expect us to face teams that we should be dominating. So I think it's very logical for us to go after more offensive minded.
So I'm guessing you're a Lichtsteiner proponent.
Oh, yeah. Man. I think for about 2 years I've been saying, look, this is a guy I think we should be going after. And I know that he's kind of in the same boat as Mandzukic, where, yes, they're both kind of, you know, past 30. But Juventus still very much saw the value in them. And Mandzukic, even this year, I mean, he still played in the semifinals of the Champions League, scored two, a brace at Bernabeu against Real Madrid. Last season, he scored that phenomenal overhead kick in the Champions League final, which they lost. So, I mean, Mandzukic still a player that they put great value in, even though he sometimes started as a left winger and really weird stuff like that. But Mandzukic, you know, I mean, we were interested in him last year and really wanted to sign him, but Juventus just didn't want to let him go. Maybe that'll be different now. Beşiktaş have really good ties to his agent. So that opens up possibilities because he shares the same agent with Matej Mitrović and with Domagoj Vida. So
well, we have the Croatian connection now. Interesting.
Yeah, that speaks in our favor. Plus, we have, of course, Ajan Mirimić, who's our goalkeeper coach. Anyway, I think that'll more than do it for this
so wait,
first
one last thing.
Historical.
Deadline, last like this is just in. Yeni Şafak is reporting the potential Italian outlet.
Yeah,
maybe reporting Tolgay Arslan to Roma.
To AS Roma. The figure of 12 million, that just
it
seems preposterous. I can't buy that.
Probably
I think if you can get 7 or 8, that's great, but 12 is that nobody's going to pay that for. So I can't see it happen. If it happens,
wow. Let's agree, though. So you agree, though. You would cut and run. Okay.
Oh, I'd sell straight away. If anyone comes in with 7 or more million, I would instantly sell him. I think we can get a better player
good
for that
that's
money.
Your, that's your first
but we really need to.
I got one from you.
But we really need to wrap things up now. So, okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to our second episode in which we addressed the transfer rumors and some of the stuff that already went down officially. Next week, we'll be back with some new content. We kind of overload you with two episodes in our first week here. But we're going to try and keep it to one episode a week. But we might have a little bit of those little breaking news tidbits, the very short episodes. But we'll have to wait and see. So, Sinan, thank you very much for joining me once again.
My pleasure. You know, logging out from New York, late night, early morning, New York, podcast for me. But yeah, it's fun. It's been great doing these so far. I look forward to building this getting this out there, hearing feedback maybe from potential listeners.
Definitely. If you have any feedback on the podcast, please hit us up at Beşiktaş_int on Twitter. Sinan, what's your Twitter handle again?
That's right. At Sir Writes a Lot. Sir, S-I-R, _ writes, WRRITES, like the verb. _ a lot. Sir Writes a Lot. You know, you get a dad joke right off the bat. That one's free. That one's free of charge.
Okay. And my Twitter handle is at Rosarian with a double Z or Z or whatever you like to call a Z. So that's it for us for today. Thanks very much for listening, and see you all down the road.
Yeah. Go back to chat. Pomo, şimdi Pomo'nun önüne.